Hi, podcasters. This is Andy Studna, editor of Applied Clinical Trials. For today's episode of the podcast, we are speaking with Gabriel Brambilla, CEO of Alira Health. In addition to his appointment as Alira Health CEO in 2014, Gab serves on the board of directors for startups Enlightenview, WoundForce, Firefly, and Computational Life. In 2018, he co-founded the Metro West Life Sciences Network to develop collaboration, innovation, and entrepreneurship in Boston's Metro West Life Sciences ecosystem. So thank you very much for joining me today, Gab.
Ciao, Andy. Thank you so much for inviting me.
First off, I want to get into your own career. Could you take us through how you started out and eventually ended up, you know, being so passionate about healthcare innovation?
Yeah, so I actually entered the life sciences business through serendipity. So it was not a plan when I was studying. When I was in my BA, I was studying political science, which is kind of a useless science, but I wanted to become a diplomat. I did a tried an internship for some time. I didn't like it. And then I called my dad, and my dad was in a managing director of a company in pharmaceutical in the API, active pharmaceutical ingredients sector. So he told me, yes, I'm going to hire you, but I'm going to send you to China. So I spent a couple of years in China to run a joint venture there. And that's where I started for the first time to explore life sciences, obviously much earlier in the value chain. There was not really patient contact. It was more on the CDMO, as we call it, contract development and manufacturing organization. So we were really making intermediates and raw material. But that's how I started it. And then I did my MBA. And after my MBA, the founder of CMC, that was the predecessor of Alira Health, came to my MBA in Bocconi, in Milan, and he made me an offer, which I liked. It was a very particular offer. Usually when you finish an MBA, you have these big names coming and offering you, let's say, a very standard career path for a consultant. If you look at Bain, LEK, McKinsey. And instead, the CMC was a very, very tiny company, and they proposed to me not a salary, not a real job description. They told me, I want to give you money to build an office in Italy, and you gotta be break even in 6 months and have at least $1 million in sales. And otherwise you're not gonna have a job after that. Then you decide how much money you wanted to give yourself of the budget, or how much money you wanna use to hire people or invest in marketing. So it was very entrepreneurial as a project, and I loved it. So despite my professors told me I should have picked the big names in consulting where I received offers from, I decided to go with this tiny company because of the special entrepreneurial offering and type of job. So that's how I started. And that's how I started CMC and Alira and my career in life sciences. So it was a lot of learning by doing, learning being in the market. I didn't study the real science or medicine before that.
And great. Thank you so much. So now getting into more about Alira Health. Your company is described as Alira Health is an international patient-centric global healthcare advisory, clinical research, and tech company whose mission is to humanize healthcare. We work with healthcare and life sciences organizations looking for support across their entire solutions lifecycle. So my question is, for pharma and clinical trials, what do you do specifically?
Pharma or biopharma, so biotech, pharma, they are our clients, and we provide to them solutions in the different phases of the life cycle of their development of their drugs or their devices. And for clinical trials is one of those phases. So we have three business units. One of the business units is called Research and Clinical Development. And inside of this business unit, it represents about 50% of our worldwide sales. And they have about 400 people in it. We run clinical trials. Full service clinical trials, phase one to phase three. And we run the biometrics side of the clinical trials. So data management, biostatistics, statistical programming. And whereas the phase four, which is still, according to me, a clinical topic, but it's a post-approval, that's run by the collaboration of our clinical team together with our real world solution team, which is the other business unit. So we are involved from phase four, what is called PASS studies, registries. Those are sitting in our real-world solution BU. Make sense?
Yes, definitely. To follow up on that, you know, you talked a bit about this when we were talking about your career. How did Alira Health go from CMC Consulting Group to its present entity?
So Alira became a brand only in 2017, but the major change or pivotal moment was when in 2015, myself together with my business partner from France, Ben Chambon, we decided to acquire CMC through a leverage buyout from the founder, the German founder, Klaus Michelfelder. And we bought it when the company was very, very tiny because it was probably 20 employees, less than $2 million in sales. And we bought it with the idea of building what we are trying to build right now with Alira Health, right? We are still at the beginning of the journey. We are now over $100 million in sales and over 800 employees with a portfolio of solutions divided in three business units. As we discussed, two of them, we discussed about research and clinical development, real-world solution, and the third one is consulting, where we have local global market access, patient engagement, many other consulting services within that. And so we bought the company in 2015, and then in 2017, we rebranded the company as Alira Health, and that's how Alira Health. And Alira name comes from one exercise we did with Ben. We wanted to find a new name, and so we used the first name of our two firstborn daughter. So Aurora is my daughter. Alice is the daughter of Ben. So we put Alice and Aurora together. It was Alira. And so that's how Alira was born. It's the merge of the names of our daughters. They're always very proud about it. They always remind me about that. My daughter Aurora, daddy, that's my name. That's my company. Yes.
She's great. Thank you so much, Gad. That's great. And it's great that you have that family connection to it, you know. A few months back, you participated on one of our roundtables about real-world data, which, by the way, will debut in our May issue of ACT. From there, you noted the advances in real-world data by saying the amount of money spent in real-world evidence research matched the actual money spent in clinical research in 2021, which means that the importance of proven effectiveness and not just safety and efficacy. So that being said, can you elaborate on the near future for real-world data?
First of all, I think that the definition of real-world data or real-world evidence is changing a little bit. Before, it was mainly connected to data collected in a real-world scenario. They were used mainly for commercial and marketing use, right? You collect data because it might help you then to push the product farther and have more access to patients. But it was not really used years ago for regulatory purposes, for clinical purposes, for maybe a little bit market access purposes, but it was really more of a commercial use and marketing use. So that changes a lot the definition, right? Now it's any data that is collected in the real world that can support evidence generation and the whole life cycle of the development of the drug. You might collect real world evidence that might help you in the next clinical trial. It might help you in extension of the claim of your product, might help you to get a different type of indication. So the quality of the data that you have to collect in real world evidence now is even higher because you have to be able to be used in front of the FDA, used in front of the payers, used in front of different type of authorities that expect a certain type of quality for the data. So is growing as a market because the applicability, the use of real world data now is expanded beyond the commercial marketing use it was years ago. But at the same time, the requested quality and complexity on how you collect the data is increased, right? And therefore, people that were running or companies were running real world evidence, they have to become more versed towards what does it mean collecting real world evidence, but with a clinical quality grade. Huh? Almost you're collecting real-world evidence, but that have to convince FDA that you can use that evidence to maybe create what is called an external control arm. You have to convince the EMA that you can extend a certain indication with that particular data. So again, it's a fascinating discipline because not only is growing, but is increasing in complexity and in requirements, right? Which makes it a beautiful place to be in for Alira Health because plenty of challenges, but plenty of opportunities.
Hey, great. You know, going back to that roundtable, you also discussed the value of data to individuals. So Could you elaborate how data sharing in clinical research should be implemented to value the person?
So far, the last years, there's been a lot of focus on data coming from healthcare providers, your doctors, your hospital, or data coming, usually claim data coming from the payers, because we always believe that those are high standard quality data, very reliable. And the data that we were collecting from patients were mainly data connected to their mood, how they feel, did you take the drug or not? So we're a good addition to have, but we're not the core part of the generation of data set in real world scenarios. Things are changing, especially in the United States, for two things. First of all, the importance of that qualitative data is becoming key, actually, in being able to create patient impact. Because sometimes you might collect clinical data that tells the patient is, let's say, cured somehow. Let's talk about a disease like IBS. You don't have inflammation anymore in your intestine. You should be good. But the patient doesn't feel good for many different reasons. Did you maximize patient impact with the treatment? No, because the patient is still not feeling good. So you need to hear what the patient wants to say to you. And so it's a much more holistic way of collecting real-world evidence that goes beyond the clinical impact, but really the patient impact holistically. That's the first one. So the importance of that data, qualitative data, it's higher now because we understand the complexity of how we should treat or involve and partner with. I don't know if you should call it patient. You know, patience comes from pacio, which means the suffering in Latin. The consumer, if you want to use it in a different way, just to be. The second important part is that now patients in the United States can have control of their clinical data too. So I don't have to go anymore to the hospital to say, I want to have the clinical data of patient X, Y, Z. I can ask the patient to download their EMR with doctor notes from their particular provider. And then the patient will decide if they want to upload that information in the clinical trial I'm running, or the real world evidence I'm running, or the registry I'm running. So they become the perfect vehicle for the collection of clinical data too, because they're the one that collecting all the doctor notes and all the clinical evidence that is sitting inside of the EMR. That is happening only in the US thanks to the Cures Act and the fact that the new regulation went into place on the blocking information part from the 6th of October of last year. So we're really at the beginning of this. But this is creating a huge opportunity because now patients, they own their data, Andy. And who is going to stop a situation where patients will say, okay, my data have a lot of value now. I want to get paid for that data, right? I see 10 years from now, actually, there will be a private market of clinical data. Think about rare disease. Think about situations where companies now are spending a lot of money to be able to get access to clinical data of patients that are very difficult to cure, to treat, to diagnose. These patients now, they have control of their own clinical data. And so we have to be prepared for that too. It's not happening right now. We're very, very early. But there is a huge amount of value for a pharmaceutical or device company in that data that now the patient can directly own and control. It was not the case 8 months ago.
Before I let you go, you know, so far we've talked about real world data and, you know, a bunch of stuff for the future. But just from your perspective, what do you think is the most exciting healthcare innovation that we could see in maybe the next 5 years or so?
Every time I read about gene therapy, I'm so fascinated by the thing that we could do. It's incredible. Maybe because I'm fascinated because I cannot grasp it all of it. Whereas you work on small molecules and how an antibiotic works, it's clear, it's understood. But gene therapy, guys, is so incredible. So maybe I'm just fascinated by the unknown, right? For me, because I come from political science, probably that's the gap. But I love that type of research on the genes and genomics is incredible. The other side that is connected also to the genomics of the gene is the ability to do a lot more targeted therapies thanks to the diagnostic world and how we can really process information on our DNA. Before, we was talking about oncology. Now, almost oncology has been fragmented in many different rare diseases, right? Because every drug now is developed for have max effectiveness on a particular part of a population that has particular type of biomarkers, right? So it's a personalization of medicine is becoming incredible. You don't manage anymore these big studies with cardiovascular 10,000 patients. Now you go very direct and you pre-select based on biomarkers or DNA sequencing. It's incredible how you can improve the effectiveness of the drug, knowing the genomics of the person. That's fascinating, which is, again, it's still a gene, right? It's all connected to genes. So that, I think, is a beautiful part and a very interesting part for the future of medicine and diagnostics. Yeah.
All right, great. Well, Gab, thank you so much again for joining me today. I really enjoyed our conversation. And, you know, it was nice connecting again after the roundtable.
Thank you for inviting me back, Andy. Thank you.